Hey, it's episode 413 of the 343 podcast. I've got three main things that we cover in this part two of what was a two-hour conversation. Part one was episode 412, where we talked a lot about futsal, exclusively about futsal. And in this one, we talked a lot about current events, three very important current events that all of you need to be aware of. And the way it's covered in the mainstream media and all the other media outlets, not surprisingly, are not doing a good job and are definitely not informing you of why it's important and how it impacts you personally. Whether you're a parent of a youth player or you're a professional player or you're a coach at any single level, your media personality, it all impacts you. Here are the three things. Number one, it's about Wilfred Nancy. If you haven't heard, Wilfred Nancy was very successful here with the Columbus office of MLS, won MLS Cup, and then got his shot over in Europe as a coach for Celtic, the biggest club along with Rangers in the Scottish First Division, and got ousted. Absolutely did a terrible, or his record anyways, was absolutely terrible. They brought in a new manager, which was the old manager, and that new manager is now three games undefeated and they're buzzing. So coincidence, no coincidence, we jump into that. And I give you an angle or angles that you have not heard about in the mainstream. Topic number two is the MLS business model. So we talked a little bit about that in prior episodes, but I think we go into much deeper territory this time around. What specifically is MLS all about and what is it not all about? Benny extracts a lot of gold nuggets here. And speaking of current events, just the other day, it was announced that Sporting Kansas City, in other words, the Kansas City office of MLS, was being sold for $700 million. The way it's framed already in the media is incorrect. We tell you why. Topic number three, related to topic number two, is if you haven't heard of Glenn Davis, that name, that character, very good guy, very upstanding citizen of soccer in this country. He has been the Houston Dynamo broadcaster for 20 plus years. He was fired or let go from that job just a week or two ago. And man, we need to talk about that. Okay. And so we do. Now, while there's all these current events going around in MLS and American soccer, in international soccer, you are in your local environment. You still have to do your coaching duties day to day and win games on the weekends. To improve that, you go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there. They are not programs like other programs that you've seen out in the wild. Absolutely not. But I can't prove that to you here. You have to visit 343coaching.com. Look at the history, look at what has been accomplished by the people who have codified the methodology that has pioneered things at the youth level here in the United States. It's a new year. Don't let this 2026 slip away from you. Sign up right away. And parents, the same goes for you. You need to be able to mentor and guide your kids much better than you currently are. There's always room for improvement. And if you're early on the learning curve, even more important that you go to 343masterclass.com and sign up right away. For the coaches who happen to be coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, your solution is at 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go.
I want to get your takes, Gary, on the whole Wilfred Nancy situation. Obviously, MLS coach, got hired at Celtic. I think he lasted, seven or eight games and ultimately got the sacking, bro. And I saw that you tweeted a couple things about this, but one, you put, I love Celtic supporters with hearts. But you also say, I hope more MLS born and bred coaches get top jobs overseas. So I want to pick your brain on why you posted that and maybe give me your thoughts on the Nancy situation.
Yeah, I said I'm going to rely on you picking my brain. Hopefully you have some thoughts on the matter and you can extract them from me because like so many things, I leave so many things out. And after the episode is out, I'm like, I should have said this. I should have said that. I should have said the other thing, but I'll give it a go. First off, because of what you said that I posted on X, that I love Celtic supporters and I put three hearts there. It's because Celtic supporters wanted this mother effer out, you know, yesterday, so many games ago, they saw it right away and they started diagnosing the problem And they're like, this guy, his only coaching experience is in Major League Soccer. And I don't even like saying Major League Soccer because it sounds like, oh, that it's a major league. It's a minor league. Okay. It should be called Minor League Soccer. Oh, this guy's experience is MLS. So they started doing a little bit of homework beyond just the common stereotype, which is an accurate stereotype that soccer in America sucks balls. Okay. And they started to understand really quickly. Oh shit. What the fuck? Like, all the players are owned by the league, not the individual teams or the clubs. All the contracts are with the league. They started diving into all the rules. They started diving into the parity situation. They started diving into over half the teams make the playoffs. They started diving into there's no relegation here. So what's the pressure at all? Over and over and over again. So this was a great thing for American soccer, in the sense that it exposed, you know, this battle between Celtic supporters and MLS fanboys, you know, trying to protect the league. What's really curious is that it wasn't just like the Columbus Crew supporters where Nancy is from and kind of did well. It was league-wide, right? If you're like an LAFC supporter, if you're a New York City FC supporter, if you're an Inter Miami supporter, if you're just a broadcaster, if you're a reporter or quote-unquote journalist covering MLS, they all came out week after week after week after day after day trying to support Nancy and make excuses for why the guy was not doing well at Celtic. They were saying, oh, this is Celtic's fault. Celtic is trash. The board is a disaster. It doesn't have the players, a bad situation. Oh, Nancy was poorly advised. He should never have joined that dumpster fire. Never, ever, ever was there any consideration that maybe this guy, this coach, wasn't cut out to manage at that level. And they would trash the Scottish League as if the Scottish League was inferior to MLS. It's not inferior at all. Way more competitive than MLS. So that's an explanation of why I love Celtic supporters now. Okay, what else do you want me to dive into?
No, I'm just curious to why you're saying that you hope more MLS born and bred coaches get job overseas. Is that so they get exposed? Is that what you're wanting, Gary?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I want that sort of interaction between the supporters of whatever club they happen to join and the MLS ecosystem here, the MLS fans, reporters, or whatever, because you have a whole new hundreds of thousands of constituents at whatever club we're talking about coming into the fold and basically fighting on our side, on the side of people who want an open, a meritocratic ecosystem in the United States instead of a monopoly. They're basically doing our work for us. The Celtic supporters were doing my job for me in huge numbers, and seeing huge views. So yeah, I would love for 2, 3, 5, 20 MLS born and bred coaches to go overseas to big clubs, stink it up, right? And then all of those supporters and all of those clubs come to war against the monopoly.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. I see what you're saying. Correct me if I'm wrong, Gary. If you remember when Berhalter got fired, and I think we did a whole episode on who should be the next coach. I think I remember you saying, like, if it was going to be an MLS guy, like, that you do like Nancy, you know? Like, Am I wrong in that or no?
No. It's
or were you, trashing Nancy?
It's one of my sarcastic things. Oh, it should be Nancy. It should be Shrundalo. It should be like, that's probably what you've come across.
Okay. No, I just wanted to clear that up because I remember.
No. I
remember his name came up. And I wasn't saying that. I wasn't saying that you're saying like, oh yeah, it should be Nancy. But I feel like if it was going to be an MLS guy, this is who you would choose. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't.
As a cope, that if it is one of these guys, it's great also for me because they're going to crash and burn like a motherfucker. Yeah. So I want them to, I would say, you know what? If they select an MLS homer, they're going to crash the national team like a mother effer, just like Berhalter, and that's good for us.
So, Gary, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this too. We talk a lot about how MLS has a tendency to bring complacency out in players, right? There's no promotion relegation. Every single year, you're going to be in the top league, right? Doesn't matter if you make the playoffs or not. So the players can easily get complacent. Does the same thing happen with MLS coaches where they're in their system for 5, 6, 7 years? And I mean, obviously, Gary, if they're not winning much and they're losing every year, their job is probably on the line, but not to the extent of how it is in Europe. No, it's not even close.
No chance. There's so many things associated with this. Maybe I should read off my entire tweet. Do you have it there?
I do.
Let's bring that up because I'm going to mess it up. I don't want to ad hoc the whole thing. I just want to riff off of what I posted.
Yeah. Regarding the case that coaches and MLS don't get developed. Okay. You're talking about Nancy here. It's not complicated. When parity is enforced and all teams are basically the same with no huge disparities, a coach is practically rendered inconsequential. When there is no parity, such as in the rest of the world, coaches are forced to learn and have enormous dynamic range. There is huge tactical diversity by necessity. The coach of Levante has to rack his brain when confronted with Real Madrid, which is different than a mid-table team, which is different than a relegation-threatened team. Every week, it's totally different chess games. In MLS, it's merely the spinning of a roulette wheel. The dumbest coach can win and the best coach can lose. It doesn't matter. Not to mention over half the table makes the playoffs, which is considered success. No relegation, a soft, docile fan base, and a business model that doesn't depend on winning or sporting excellence, making weekly regular season games practically inconsequential. Guys in MLS more than anywhere else by far, the coach is rendered practically irrelevant. That's what happens with enforced parity and a truly inconsequential competition.
Yeah, there's just so much there. This is multiple episodes. I'll keep it brief. When I kind of said it there in the post. When you have parity, guys, when you have parity, you've basically established a situation where everything is random because the talent is completely equilibrated for the most part. So the results are random. It's like a coin flip. It's like the spinning of a roulette wheel. When you have something like that, it's not competitive. And it's not the same as PSG playing against Barcelona, two titans going at it, because there are consequences when those two guys play each other. There is no consequences here when Houston Dynamo plays the Portland Timbers. What are the consequences if one loses and the other one doesn't? There aren't monetary consequences. There aren't business consequences whatsoever. So does a coach matter, really? Not really. It doesn't really matter. Does it matter whether I flip the coin or you flip the coin, Benny? There is no skill involved in flipping the coin. You are not better than I am in getting heads. And it's people don't want to believe this, but it is true. When all the roster, everything's equal, people like to think, and this is the narrative that MLS spins. Oh, since everything is equal, the coach matters more than ever. No, he doesn't. The results are randomized, Benny. And if one team happens to be better than the other, say like Inter Miami now, you know, seems to be quite dominant and compared to the LA Galaxy or something like that. Okay, you have Lionel Messi and you have a whole crew of Argentinians. And this is the biggest complaint by even MLS fans themselves. They're like, oh, MLS, the league itself, kind of once in a while tilts the scales by design and makes a super team. So they'll make a super team with the LA Galaxy when Beckham comes. Beckham comes, let's make a brand new rule, right? So that he can come. Brand new rule. So we can get this guy, and then we'll get Keane on the team, and we'll also have Landon Donovan on the team, and we can have this super team. You know, we can basically create the New England Patriots, some sort of dynasty, and it creates storylines and things of this nature. So they put their thumb on the scale. And for Leo Messi, did they make a new rule? Not really, but it kind of seems weird, right? How Inter Miami is able to get all these designated player caliber players without making them designated players. And how can you pay Messi what he's actually worth? Well, he's getting funneled money and capital in other ways, right? Through Apple, through ads, through sponsorships. So there's ways, and it's a private company, Ben. This is what people also don't appreciate. MLS is not a public company where they have to be transparent with what it is that they do. It is a private company. They can do whatever the fuck they want, and nobody knows any better. So aside from situations like that, it's a coin flip, Ben. And by the way, and so it renders the coach irrelevant. I should mention that before Inter Miami went on their run and did well and ultimately won the whole thing, 10 fixtures before that, everybody was calling Mascherano an idiot. Mascherano doesn't know what he's doing. He's a moron. You know, it's always, you know, foreign coaches don't know what they're doing here in MLS. And then fast forward 10 fixtures later, Mascherano's a genius. He figured it out. You know, he benched Luis Suarez. And look, the final four in MLS were all foreigners, and they've turned the corner. Bro, do you see? Like literally on the flip of a coin, on the spin of a roulette wheel, all the narratives get switched over to something else because it's random. The coach does not matter here, Benny. And to make matters worse, and you have phenomenal coaches which lose, and you have terrible coaches which win. That should be proof enough. Well, I'm not going to say proof enough. I'm going to say 1 year, a coach wins MLS Cup. The next year, they're last place or don't make the playoffs or terrible or something. What does that tell you? It should put your thinking cap on a little bit.
Yeah, no, it has.
Can I end with one more thing?
Yeah, say one more thing.
Far more important than parity is the non-sporting thing which renders the coach irrelevant. Being successful on the field in sport here in MLS doesn't mean anything with respect to business, the successful business. MLS franchises, MLS itself, is quote unquote successful from a business perspective, no matter what. If I own Real Salt Lake, which hasn't done dick in forever, or if I own Colorado Rapids, and I don't really own it, I own shares in MLS, and they give me I get to operate the local office. Okay, that's actually how it works. So if I'm operating the Colorado Rapids, hiring kind of who I want, you know, firing who I want and things of that nature, I don't have to win to make sure that my investment keeps appreciating in value. I don't have to do anything. I can just sit on it. It's a scarce asset. I can't go be relegated. I can't go down. I forever have this permanence here. And over the course of time, it will appreciate at a compound annual growth rate of roughly 20 or 25% or more, which beats the stock market, which beats almost every other investment I can make with my money. I don't have to be excellent in sport at all. So do I care about my coach? I don't care. It doesn't matter. I get a trash coach. It doesn't matter. And that's why a lot of these franchises do. They get coaches who have been failures where it doesn't matter. Or they'll get somebody. It's coaching is meaningless in MLS. And because it's meaningless, they don't get developed. Overseas, everything matters. And I'll end with this point, Benny. Why does it matter a lot from a tactical perspective? Because there's disparity in the teams. When you have to play Real Madrid and you are a regular La Liga team or a bottom of the table La Liga team, you have to change everything with respect to how you play. You have to train and learn how to perhaps bunker and counter. You have to train specifically, how am I going to stop Vinicius, right? Or how am I going to eliminate Jude Bellingham? You have to specifically tailor make training sessions for this and rack your brain over it. And the points matter. The points actually effing matter. And then when I'm playing a relegation team, it's like, oh, dude, I can dominate possession on them. Or I can try. So you completely change everything, your training sessions. You completely change how you're going to line up. You completely change everything associated with it. When you're in MLS, you don't have those disparities. Nobody's going out there saying, man, I'm gonna bunker against LAFC and counter. They aren't doing that. It's pickup soccer here. Pickup games.
Yeah.
There's no coaching.
Yeah, Gary, if people want to see a perfect example of what you're talking about right there with making the tactical adjustments, I would advise go on YouTube and look up Mourinho and how he breaks down when he was the head coach of Inter and when they played Barca and they beat him in the Champions League, right? And he has the whole tactical board in front and he said, these were my exact adjustments. You know, this is how we played. This is how I had my left back come inside a little bit more. He's like, yeah, we were going up against some guy, like, I forget his name. I think it's Messi or something. The guy's a fucking genius, but he literally shows how he prepared his team and what he told his team before the game. And this is exactly how we're going to play. And you're not going to see that in MLS, bro. And Gary, people are going to come out and tell you like, oh, how can you say this about Mascherano? He just won MLS Cup. Like fucking Tata Martino was there and he didn't win anything with them. Or he didn't win MLS Cup with them. And people are clowning on Tata Martino. It's like, are you telling me that Mascherano is a better coach than Tata Martino? No fucking chance, bro. No chance. But it was a flip of a coin and Inter Miami won. And now all of a sudden Mascherano is a genius and Tata Martino sucks balls, dude.
And by the way, MLS coaches, I'm sure they do what you described. They do have discussions or video sessions or something. Okay, I'm going to have you come a little bit on the inside this game because the other team has so-and-so, or I'm going to have you man mark. That is happening, Benny, but it's inconsequential. It's completely inconsequential. It has no impact on the game, on the randomness of the results. Zero impact.
Yeah. No, I agree, dude. I agree. Have you seen the video that I'm talking about with Mourinho? Badass video, dude.
I don't think so. I know what it is you're talking. Obviously, I watched that game live when it happened and him running out onto the field doing this. I actually made a t-shirt. I don't know if you ever saw that t-shirt I made of Mourinho running out on the field doing this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have to bring it up. I'm going to find it. I'm going to put it in the show. Amazing. Maybe we should make those shirts.
You better be careful fucking doing that fucking salute because people are going to screenshot you, Gary, and say, Jesus all of a sudden, Christ. Somebody's going to screenshot that and you're going to go fucking viral, dude. Oh, look at Gary. He's a fucking Nazi sympathizer. Do you want to talk about Steve Cherundolo's comments about the U.S. system do you want to save
it? Yeah, let's end there. I know I sent you a link there about some of Steve Cherundolo's comments. I just wanted to maybe address it. I already forgot because it was a while ago, but bring it up, man.
Do you want me to just read the thing or summarize it? What do you think?
One more thing.
Yeah.
Hold on. One more thing. That's currently in the news, so I wanted to get it out. There's this broadcaster by the name of Glenn Davis, and he just posted on X that he was dismissed from being the Houston Dynamo broadcaster, which he has been for 20 years there. And I think I've been exposed to some of his work and I think he's one of the good guys. He has been critical of the Houston Dynamo, especially more recently. And, you know, he got let go. A lot of people came to wish him well, obviously as do I, but a lot of folks in MLS, fans, supporters, journalists, whatever, like, oh, this is such a huge mistake by the Houston Dynamo. You know, how could they do this? You know, they don't know what they're doing. Like, this is just further evidence that they don't get it. Okay. And just like coaches, Glenn Davis or a broadcaster, whoever, are meaningless. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to the Houston Dynamo. It doesn't impact their business, their overall business, their own, the ownership doesn't get impacted analogy. Okay. All analogies are flawed. Let me give you an analogy. If you have a lot of money, you want to buy scarce assets. Maybe buy a Picasso. Okay. Picasso is hanging up in a museum. This museum happens to have a tour guide. You know, he's been the tour guide there, famous, you know, locally famous for 20 years. Brilliant man, knows everything about the Picasso painting, knows everything about the other works of art there. Community man, you know, beloved by everybody. And, you know, the museum decides to get rid of him or whatever, you know, he's gone now, gets fired, whatever. Oh, what a travesty, blah, blah, blah. The Picasso painting doesn't lose its value. The Picasso painting keeps appreciating value year over year over year over year. It means nothing that the steward of the Picasso painting is no longer there or was let go for whatever reason. Totally meaningless. Do you get me? So it's just another example of folks here not understanding what business this actually is.
Yeah, I know, right?
You have a great youth coach at an MLS academy and they get let go or they move on to something else. Meaningless. Oh, great coach, you know, leaves, or a great player, you know, decides not to sign a homegrown contract or an MLS contract, go somewhere else. Doesn't fucking matter. The asset keeps appreciating. All that matters is preserving the monopoly, because then you preserve the scarcity. That's all that matters. Nothing else matters. So if this guy, Glenn Davis, was saying a few things that were critical of the Houston Dynamo, well, that goes against the prime directive that I just laid out. The prime directive is the preservation of power, the preservation of the monopoly. They need a broadcaster in there, which will be a pom-pom cheerleader no matter what happens.
Well, let me ask you this, Gary. All of the owners of MLS franchises and, you know, people on the board, their reasoning for wanting to keep the system close, obviously to preserve power, but is it also because they want to preserve their financial stability? They want to preserve their money? Like, is that the main reason? The money?
The main reason for the existence of MLS and having a share in MLS is so that the wealthy have a place to park their money and have their money preserve its purchasing power and even appreciate in its purchasing power. That's why. When you have money, when you have some amount of money, you start thinking about, what am I going to do with my money? That's what you start thinking about. Because if you keep it in a bank account, like your average Joe here, the purchasing power of your dollar goes down every single year. Every single year, there's inflation because there's money printing. And so things get more expensive. And so your savings buy less and less and less and less every single year. So what do you have to do? You have to start figuring out a way so that your money doesn't lose its purchasing power. And the common Joe that happens to have some money in their bank account, an extra 10K or 50K or 70K or whatever, just the average sort of American, if they're fortunate enough to not be living month to month, they're like, okay, what do I do with this 10K or 50K or 100K? I can't just leave it there, because 5 years from now, that 100K only buys 70K worth of stuff. So what do I do? Well, the classic thing that everybody is told to do is one of two things. Either you buy a house and you go into debt, you leverage yourself like crazy, you go into debt, now you're a slave because you have a mortgage. Okay, so congratulations for 30 or 50 years now, can't quit your job, can't do whatever you want, you're in debt for your whole life. Congrats, good job, cool. But hey, at least when you quote unquote retire, you have a house that has kept up with inflation. So your purchasing power wasn't completely destroyed and eroded. And so when you retire, you have that asset and you can tap into that asset and have food on the table until you die. Good job, congrats. The other possibility is you go into the stock market. You buy the S&P 500. Historically speaking, the S&P 500 appreciates, compounds year over year, anywhere between 7 and 17% per year, per annum. Depends on the time interval that you're looking at. So cool. Inflation, real inflation, not the bullshit that the government gives you. Real inflation, I don't know, on the order of real, like 5 to 7%. Okay. It's not the 2%, 3% nonsense that they feed you. It's not true. And we all kind of understand that. So you go into the stock market and at least you're kind of keeping up with inflation, which means you're not really making money. You're at least not destroying your savings. Your saving is keeping up with the inflation of things. Cool. Congratulations. But you're never getting wealthy. You're never moving up the social hierarchy, the economic hierarchy. And the more money that you have, Benny, so once you get into being a millionaire or a decabillionaire, a centimillionaire or a billionaire, you have other things at your disposal to beat inflation and not just keep up with inflation. And one of those things is like maybe buying fine art. One of those things is buying a sports franchise, because the sports franchise here in the United States, since there's no promotion relegation, doesn't preserve, right? It's not stability like you said. They don't make any more of them, Ben. It's even better than fine art. And I kind of gave you the compound annual growth rate of an MLS franchise. And people can do their own calculations. I'll do a calculation. I'll just post it for everybody, okay? So they can see it for themselves. It's better than the S&P 500. It's better than almost any other asset that you can get. So that's why there's huge demand to getting an MLS franchise, which really means, it doesn't mean you're buying a team or anything. What really means is you're buying equity and shares in MLS. And then you get to operate your little local office. That's why they do it, Benny. That's why they do it. This whole thing, I'm going to repeat it again. This whole thing about, oh, hey, it's great business if they develop youth players and then sell them, you know, to Europe for $5 million. $5 million is a clown fart show, you know, to a multi-billionaire. Means nothing to them. You guys just don't get it, okay? These people who have that kind of money, their net worth fluctuates up and down on a daily basis by tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars on a daily basis. It's going like this. So to sell a player for $5 million, you guys are retarded or something? You think that they're in the business to develop talent and sell it overseas to make $5 million?
Well, it's because if you don't have that kind of money, and you hear $5 million or $10 million sale to you, it's like, oh, wow, that's fucking amazing, bro. But to them, it's like
totally
$5 or fucking $10 out of their bank account.
Totally. Totally, Benny. Totally. And the whole thing about, oh, we have to protect them because, look, they bought the franchise. Now they bought the franchise for $200 million or $300 million. But it wasn't always $200 or $300 million. It was $10 or $20 million. Or 50 million. But even if you say, oh, they bought the franchise for 300 million and then, you know, another 100 million here or there, they're half a billion, that's still not outrageous money. Because again, like you said, the average Joe doesn't understand how they get access to capital, how they finance these sorts of things. They think they're opening their bank account and saying, oh, MLS, here's $500 million. They're not doing that.
Damn, bro. Can you imagine how it must feel for owners and investors overseas if you purchase a club? Yeah. Bro, the pressure to stay in the top league is like fucking unreal, bro. Because if you get relegated, the value of your club is going to go down, no? And so you're basically losing your investment, no? Whereas here, if you buy in, it's like fucking buying a expensive-ass bottle of wine, and in fucking 50 years, it's going to be 100 times more value, bro. You know what I'm saying?
You don't have to do anything. You don't have to do anything here.
Yeah. But over there, it's like you have to fucking survive every fucking year. No?
You've got to do something. You got to do something. The other component to all this, Benny, is why I just explained why they get into MLS. Now, why do they get into it overseas? These people with huge amounts of money or states themselves. Right, like Man City group, or like why are heads of state, you know, getting involved with this sort of stuff? It's because it's not to make money. It's not the same reasons for why you invest in MLS. That's a tiny part of it. It's for soft power and, you know, a nice little entertainment for themselves too. Kind of think about, again, because everybody understands this and we've all been exposed to it from a cultural perspective. Think about the Roman Colosseum, right? Mm-hmm. Why do you have gladiator fights, you know, and you have the emperor going to the stadium? It's all of that, right? It's not to make money.
What do you mean by soft power?
To get into the right circles or to get into certain networks that you may not be able to get into unless you have an in. And when you own, say, a Premier League team, say LeBron James, who quote unquote owns apparently reportedly a piece of Liverpool. Well, you do something like that, all of a sudden you could go to England and meet the royal family on a different level. Like he can meet the royal family because he's LeBron James, I'm sure. But not only meeting the royal family, you can meet other dignitaries, you know, and diplomats there and invite them to the VIP, the seating in the stadium and have them meet Mo Salah and Virgil van Dijk, you know, and have parties and get involved in a different circle of power, network. And if you have political aspirations, if you have other business aspirations in a foreign country, in your own country, that's your in. Versus if you're just the guy who's just a basketball player, you don't get those inroads. Or if you're just the owner of Home Depot, you don't get into the circles of power of politics necessarily. Do you get what I'm saying? These are all different adjacent avenues or reasons for people to own professional sports. It's not to make money. Wake the fuck up. Most all clubs around the world lose money. Most all of them lose money. Okay. So why do people own clubs? It's the dumbest decision in the world if you think that it's to make money, right? Yeah, because they lose money.
But also those people have the money to lose, though.
Yes, which feeds into, I just want to, you know, own a professional sports team and have entertainment. But it's all this other ancillary stuff that I just scratched the surface on as to why they own it. You don't own it to make money. There's a lot better things to do with your money than own a professional soccer team overseas where there's promotion relegation. And when there's promotion relegation, it's an open market, it's an open ecosystem, it's competitive. And so any profits that you would make get, you know, shrink to zero and go negative right away because of competition, Benny, because of competition, because the guy beneath you who is relegation threatened will spend more, right, to stay in the first division. And if you don't respond to that and spend even more to get even more talent, guess what? You're going to be relegated. So it's a spending game to perpetually stay in the highest flight that you possibly can. And so with perpetual spending, profits go to zero, Ben. They go to zero. They go to zero. Have you ever heard of the book Zero to One from Peter Thiel? Great book. I'm sure somebody in the audience has read it. Peter Thiel, I'm not going to go into the history. We're already at the 1 hour and 30 mark here. One of the things that really stood out to me, and I read it when it first came out, he's like, everybody wants a monopoly. Competition is for losers. I think that is the exact quote. Competition is for losers, because if you enter a space that is competitive or hyper-competitive, you will never make money, because everybody will just decrease their margins, i.e. their profits, to acquire more market share. And so you undercut my pricing, and then all the customers will go to you and not to me. And then, so I have to match what you're doing to at least try to preserve my customer base. And if I want to acquire more customers away from you, I have to undercut your pricing. But you can only undercut each other's pricing to the point where you've lost all your profits. And so that's what naturally happens in an open market. Profits go to zero. So what do you need? You need some sort of differentiator. You want a monopoly is what you want. So in open soccer systems across the world, since they're open and hyper-competitive, everybody's profits go to zero. And many owners or whoever's owning the team are willing to go negative, right, to stay in the highest flight or the highest possible flight that they can for those other reasons that I previously shared. Maybe it helps their other businesses in the area. Maybe it helps their political aspirations. Maybe it just fuels their ego. Whatever the case may be, it's not to make money. Classes out of session.
Economics 101 with Gary, dude. If the system were to open here, Gary, it would be the same thing of people willing to make that financial investment to achieve soft power, basically, right? And get into the right circles and have all these different opportunities.
Absolutely,
so it,
man.
So it wouldn't become about making money. It would be
absolutely
doing everything.
And this isn't the full story. Obviously, we can't cover the full story, but there's a mathematical calculation that you also make, okay? It's like, okay, I'm willing to lose money on this, but how much am I willing to lose? Because remember, it is a rare asset, a scarce asset, a football club, a professional football club. So it will increase its value over time, no matter what, especially if you stay in the first division or whatever division it is. So your asset price is going up year over year at a certain annual compound growth rate. And then you're losing money year over year at a certain rate. So you can do that calculus and say, okay, I can lose X millions of dollars every year for 10 years, but that's okay because after 10 years, my club, my asset is still worth more net than what I've lost over the past 10 years. So I still come out on top. Did that make sense?
I would have to hear it a couple more times for it to fully make sense, Gary, but I see where you're going.
Let me see if I can do, it's hard to do math on the fly, okay? Let me see if I can do a decent job with simple numbers. Let's say I can buy, this pen for $100, okay? And I know that this pen will increase its value 20% every single year. So next year, it'll be worth $120. And the year after that, it'll be worth $143. And it keeps going up in value every single year, every single year. So over 10 years, maybe this pen, which I bought is at $100, in 10 years, maybe it's worth $250. So I'm okay with losing $150 over those 10 years, because when I end up selling this pen in 10 years, I break even. Even though I was losing money by spending money by keeping this pen.
I got you. You need to change your professorship to economics, bro.
Nah, not at all, man. Not at all. It's
love it, bro.
I've never actually taught this stuff or tried to teach it or in any way, shape, or form. So I don't know if I'm doing a decent job. Did any of it come through?
It did, Gary. It did. What do you think, man? You want to keep going or save the Shirandula stuff?
Yeah, let's keep going. Why not, dude? If people are willing to listen to Joe Rogan and his guests for 3 hours, I think we're fine at 1 hour and 30 minutes or even 2 hours. So maybe we can break the record because we still didn't even get into the one that I sent you, right? The Steve Shirandula thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Because I have a feeling this could be a whole fucking two episodes in and of itself, dude.
How about, let me address the Steve Shirandula thing real quick. And if people are interested, we can expand on it more later. So be my guest, however you want to present it.
Yeah, well, let me just, I'll read his quote, but he explains why the youth system there is much better than the U.S. and Germany. Okay, so now he's back coaching in Germany. He says, a lot of players can get lost down the wrong path in the U.S. that maybe isn't right for them. If we can simplify the path like it is in Europe, all of the youth leagues are filtered upwards towards the Bundesliga, the first division. All of the youth national teams act as scouts for all the clubs. So the federation and clubs are working together. There is a filter system that no talent is gone unseen. I fear that in this moment in the US, there's a lot of good players that aren't being seen for many reasons. Most of the scouting going on is from US soccer. Huge country. You need a lot of manpower to cover the US. Not realistic. And then you have MLS, but MLS clubs are only responsible for their own region. So it doesn't make sense for us to go scout in Texas. That's where other countries get it right. they have regional and international scouts. There's just a number of scouts out there where every single player is identified. Almost to the end here. Remember the old Olympic development programs? You start with your district, state, regional, then national. I felt there were a lot more players being identified and seeing in that system than there are currently. Long story short, I think the path is much clearer in Europe than it is here. You can get lost in the mess of youth development programs. A lot of clubs, a lot of leagues within clubs, or clubs form their own leagues to keep players within the clubs. Our system right now is not conducive to developing talent. It's keeping talent in a closed league. We need to change that.
That last sentence is quite interesting because he brings up the closed league. Look, somebody like Steve Cherundolo played in Germany his whole life, coached in Germany already before coming over to the States. He knows things. And while he was employed by MLS, he can't say things. And now he still doesn't say things, but he kind of did indirectly. So much to unpack. I think you're right. It's a whole episode unto itself. Let me just hone in on one key piece, which I think will bring the most value to people who are interested in learning. And that is the scouting piece. So in effect, he's saying the truth of the matter with respect to how it's done overseas. Overseas, the clubs are scouting like mother effers because their lives depend on it. You have to find what you consider the best of the best, no matter where it happens to be. And so what, because you have to survive, you don't want to get relegated, or and you have objectives. You have to stay up and you have to compete for things, and you have a fan base that will crucify you if you don't perform or if they sense that you're not operating at maximum. So they develop scouting departments, legit scouting departments that are spread far and wide to their maximum possibility. Here in the States, the MLS franchises have no incentive really to do that. Didn't we need a scout? We just went over the whole business model of MLS, essentially. It's irrelevant. You can suck ass and it's fine. The asset continues appreciating value. You're not going to get relegated. The fan base is effectively a bunch of eunuchs without dicks that aren't going to come after you. They're going to continue being customers. So what is the incentive to spend a shit ton of money on a scouting department and go scout? And I don't want to say disagree because I know he knows, but I'll just use that word, disagree with him on it. He says, here in the States, the MLS teams are only responsible for their own region. They're not responsible for dick, okay? They're the quote-unquote rules, which aren't enforceable because MLS is a private company. They can do whatever they want. There aren't really rules. They can break them as whenever they want and nobody will be the wiser. Is every franchise has its own territory, and you can't, if you're in LA, you can't go and scout what's happening in Portland or in Seattle or in Dallas. You know, you can't go and get that talent over there, which goes to what we mentioned in the last episode of kids essentially being owned when they're just because of where you're born. They're not really responsible. It doesn't matter if you scout or you can get the best. It's completely irrelevant. So he's correct. It's falling on the Federation, on U.S. soccer here, because U.S. soccer actually does have an incentive to try its best to find what it considers the best players, because they actually do have to compete with other than themselves, right? They actually do have to play against Mexico and El Salvador and Argentina and Romania. They aren't friends. And so U.S. soccer has to go and scout. And U.S. soccer can't blanket the whole freaking country and uncover every nook and cranny. That's why centralized systems suck ass, Benny, versus distributed system. It goes back to economics. Centralized power versus distributed power. We have a central system here. We have a communist system, basically. It's not going to perform.
So do you think the top people at U.S. soccer know that the problem in this country is that the system is closed in regards to MLS?
Maybe.
Because you just said, right, they have to find the best players to compete if they want to compete on the global stage. But do they not realize that fucking so many people are not being elevated because the system is closed?
Maybe.
It's like somebody at U.S. soccer has to fucking see the problem and say, whoa, like fucking MLS is basically running the whole show here. We need to change this, or we need to fix this. Or does US soccer, like, what incentive does US soccer have to keep the system closed? I don't understand that.
Yeah. Their incentive is because people run the institution, right? The organization, their incentives is you do what we tell you to do. And I'm saying MLS, I'm being MLS now. You, okay. Cindy Parlow Cohn, if you're not on board this ship, you're done. You're out. Or you, Jay Batson, or whatever the fuck his name is, the CEO of US Soccer, which is all part of the mafia. He's part of the mafia. But let's say you had some sort of radical in there who is doing what you just suggested. Hey, we need to do something about this, you know, for us to actually be better. If somebody like that is there, you're done. They'll be shown the door one way or another. US soccer is completely corrupt. The whole federation is completely corrupt, Benny. MLS runs the federation. You have a board member there in Don Garber, who's been a board member for, somebody fact check me, 18 fucking years. You can't have that situation. You can't have a situation where a monopoly runs everything, because then you have, even if you're well-intentioned and you want to do what's right, you can't, because you won't have a job. It's very simple. Eric Winalda wanted to do the right thing. They won't let Eric Winalda work.
It's a mafia, bro.
It's a gang. It's a gang, bro. It's a gang. It's a mafia. It's so bad.
Yeah. You know what? The other thing I was thinking about the other day, Gary, is the mainstream soccer media, all the pundits and everybody that's supposedly big in U.S. soccer, they never comment or share or post any of the stuff that we post, bro.
Of course not.
But I know they watch it, though. I know they watch it.
Of course. Absolutely.
But they're never going to comment on it and say, oh, yeah, Gary, you're 100% right. Never, bro. Never.
They learned at the very beginning, Benny, when we were making waves at the very beginning with Barcelona USA, which is now known as TFA, and going to Europe and make cup and competing against Ajax and Barcelona. At the very beginning, Benny, they would share things. And over the course of time, they kind of wanted me to kind of bend and be part of the mafia. And they learned that I stand on this principle. I'm a principled person. I won't bend and just go against everything that I believe in. I won't compromise my integrity. And so that was the breaking point, Ben. Of course not. And it's not just me. I just mentioned Eric Winalda. Similar situation. I don't want to put words in his mouth. I don't want to say that I know his situation at all. But there's a reason. You know, he's always said the right things. And look where he's at now. And tactical manager, which we brought up the last time, Filippo, very popular, much bigger YouTube channel than us, much bigger audience. People listen to him. They don't spread his stuff at all. Silence, zero. I want to bring you back to this Glenn Davis guy, the Houston Dynamo broadcaster. In his letter, kind of saying thank you and goodbye to the fans of Houston and all that. Because you asked me, do these people at US Soccer know the real problem and what should actually happen or not? And I said, maybe, because maybe some of them don't. They've been in the system for so long, Ben, that they actually believe the MLS bullshit narrative. And this Glenn guy, for example, who I think is a good guy, one of the good ones, in his farewell letter, he calls MLS teams clubs. So you've had a multi-decade career and you're one of the good guys, and you still don't know they're not clubs. That is how powerful being in the bubble actually is. You get brainwashed. I get brainwashed in whatever bubbles I reside. I get brainwashed too. I'm sure of it.
Crazy. I would love to see you fucking go on the podcast with Donovan and Tim Howard, bro. They call the show Unfiltered. Unfiltered fucking my balls, dude. Like,
this is the most controversial.
That's exactly what I'm saying, dude. Unfiltered, but only to the extent of what we can and can't say about MLS, bro. But like I said, they will never have you on their show, dude, because they'll fucking lose everything, dude. Sad.
They won't lose everything. They don't want to amplify people who are not aligned with the gang. They're part of the gang, Benny. If you're part of a gang, you don't say nice things about the rival gang or anybody who says, hey, you're a gang. You know, we should kind of like do something about this. They don't want to amplify those voices. Kidding me?
Change the name of your show then, bro. Because it's not unfiltered, dude.
Well, their demographic, their target audience, they don't know any better, Benny. That's why they always have this narrative of grow the game. We have to bring in all these people who don't know dick about soccer, who are Americans, under the tent. That's how we grow the game. They target the naive, the innocent, the non-soccer first households. That is who they target. Because those folks, nothing wrong with them, but they don't know any better. And the gang knows that they can brainwash that demographic into their story, into their narrative. They can't brainwash me. They can't brainwash soccer first, multi-generation soccer heritages in the United States. They aren't going to brainwash the Guatemalan Americans who outnumbered the U.S. soccer, U.S. men's national team fans when they played against Guatemala in whatever was the Gold Cup. They can't brainwash those people. They can't brainwash the vast majority of the Mexican Americans numbering in the millions here in the United States who care deeply about football and watch America and Chivas and Cruz Azul and don't go to MLS games. And they know in their heart that MLS is trash. They can't brainwash those people. They can't brainwash the soccer first households, Ben. They can brainwash the non-soccer first households. They can brainwash the multi-sport households, the ones where they watched Alabama college football or whatever. They can brainwash those people. That's why they're not going to talk to me. And to put a nice bow on this episode, it goes back to Eddie Johnson. They'll have that same attitude as Eddie Johnson. They'll say, well, I'm Landon Donovan. I'm a American soccer legend. I know what I'm talking about. Gary, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay, fine. I understand the mentality. I get it. I think it's just supremely ignorant. No, you're just part of the gang. You are a retired player, and now you have to have a job, or you want a job. What job are you going to get? Are you going to go be a doctor, a scientist, an engineer, anything of that in that sort of, I don't know, strata? No, you're not. What are you going to do? You have no skills. What are you going to do? Okay. It's many of I'm not bagging on ex-players. Many of them turn out to be amazing, have amazing post-careers. I literally just was talking to Grok in the car the other day. I asked Grok about Daylan McCutcheon and Corey Minor. So who the fuck is Daylan McCutcheon, Corey Minor? So when I went to high school, St. Paul High School, I would go to the football games. I had a lot of friends in gridiron football as well. I would go to the, you know, Friday Night Lights and all that shit. And one of our biggest rivals was Bishop Amott High School. And they had these two phenoms, right? Which I just named. And I was curious as to, you know, how it all turned out for them. And they both ended up playing in the NFL. And then they retired, obviously. And I forgot, I know that Corey Minor now is like a motivational speaker or personal wellness coach or something of that nature. And Daylan McCutcheon, I think, is back at Bishop Amott. He played corner for San Francisco 49ers and maybe another NFL team or two. He's back at his former high school, and he's a coach there at his former high school. So there's a lot of post-professional careers that turn okay, but it seems like a lot of them, you know, you go back to, you you're stuck. So you have to be a commentator, or you have to form your own little podcast called Unfiltered, which, by the way, hey, going back to ad hominem attacks, right? That Gary doesn't know what he's talking about and you're just whatever. Do you remember Christian Pulisic's dad coming out when they were attacking Christian Pulisic about not showing up for the national team? Remember Christian Pulisic's dad kind of went after Donovan and those folks saying, look, they're just stupid podcasters, you know, trying to get attention now. Well, yeah.
You remember that. Yeah.
And they're part of the gang, Benny. So they are still on the tit of minor league soccer, MLS, US soccer. They're trying to help, and the gang is trying to help them. So Don Garber's like, oh, I'll be a guest on your show. And other people who are in MLS will go be a guest on their show. They all support each other.
If invited, would you go on the show?
No. We covered this before.
You wouldn't
we
go
covered
on?
This before. No, we covered this before. Why? Their whole objective is that... Actually, I don't know. I take that back. I should say I don't know. I'd have to really think about it. Because their whole objective... You're literally agreeing to go into gang territory where they're going to whip out all the tools and weapons at their disposal to destroy their enemy. They won't be going into it in a good faith manner to have a good conversation. It's like, how can we screw this guy? Why do you want to do that, Benny? Why do you want to take a knife to a gunfight, as they say? The dumb decision.
No, but you don't have a knife, dude. You have a nuke.
No, I don't. Because if you go on somebody else's show or their show or something, I know what's going to happen. First off, you get blindsided. You get set up. You get framed in certain ways. They have the pedigree in the eyes of the common public, right? So they have that benefit of the doubt. So where's the common public going to fall on? Whose side are they going to fall on? Then Donovan's side, obviously. And they're very susceptible to pedigree. And then to make matters worse, they also have Final Cut. So in their post-production, they will edit things the way that they want to edit it. Now, if they want to come on our show, that's a different story. Come on my show, under my rules, that's a different story.
I'll make it happen, bro.
It ain't going to happen. I don't want to divulge things I shouldn't divulge. I just know things.
Yeah, that's all right. They can keep doing their unfiltered. This is the true unfiltered stuff that you're never going to hear from mainstream media today.
100%, man. 100%. And you won't hear it even with other independent folks doing great work. And I applaud them and I try to promote them as much as I possibly can. That's another objective I have for 2026, Ben. I want to do a better job of doing whatever little we can to help elevate truly independent voices.
Agreed, bro. I just got to say, dude, if you're still listening up to this point, you're a fucking true legend, bro.
Benny, I like to think that I'm kind of entertaining.
You are.
Yeah. My point about other independents, they don't have the same sort of experiences that we have, Ben. You might be an independent talking about soccer, but what is the breadth of your experience? And I'm not doing an ad hominem attack here. It's just, hey, I have these experiences and I'm sharing them in an unvarnished way. What experiences do the other independents have? Oh, you studied journalism and you come out and you're kind of interested in soccer and you want to report on it and this is how you see the world. Okay, that's awesome. But can you really talk about MLS in the way that I talk about it, or or US soccer the way I talk about it, or that player development and the way I talk about it, or in traveling overseas with players and the way I talk about it, or in representing professional players and that whole world the way I talk about it. We all have our experience. We all have something to offer, Benny. Don't get me wrong. Everybody has something valuable to offer.
Agreed, Gary. Legendary. Legendary. And you know what's, it's usually never me that drops the mic, so... I'm proud of myself.
You dropped the mic. You dropped the mic for sure. You nailed the futsal thing 100%. I don't even know if I can title this episode Futsal Sucks My Balls anymore, because half of the episode is not futsal now.
That's true. Well, yeah, dude, it was like 45 minutes of futsal. We covered a lot today, dude. Futsal, yeah. Nancy, talking Shirundolo, why the MLS runs the way it does. It was a lot, bro. Hopefully, yeah. You know, people get some education from this, dude.
Hey, it's kind of also for our own entertainment, right? We're just two buds having a conversation, getting shit off our chest.
If one person just opens their eyes after this episode, then I will feel satisfied, dude.
It takes a while, man. It takes a while. It takes a while to undo the brainwashed, but we'll, whatever. We'll do our part, Benny.
Hey, any parting remarks to the audience?
I'm always curious as to what they're thinking, good or bad. So it's cool when we get comments. Sometimes it's a little discouraging and sad when we get comments that are always the common misguided narratives that have existed in American soccer for decades. I still want to hear from those folks, obviously, because it gives a signal as to how pervasive those things still are. But I'd be really curious too as to what they want to hear from us, because there's just so many topics to cover. And we do this these podcasts once per week. So that's 52 per year. It's not enough to cover everything that's going on. So getting ideas from them as to what their struggles are, what they're super curious about is helpful in stimulating or at least giving us something to think about as to what to talk about. And don't get me wrong. I can go on forever about everything, but it'd be better if I knew from them a little bit and just share the episode, man, because if you want to improve your current situation, whatever your current situation happens to be, the only way you're going to do that is if the mass market starts bending to your will or bending to what it is that you want to see in the world. And if we represent that in any way whatsoever, you need to get more people hooked on 343. So like us, subscribe, share it with everybody.
Love it.
What do you want to say?
Well, actually, you know, when you were talking, I remembered something that I wanted to bring up to you in the episode, but I forgot. Did you hear about, I don't know if this is true or not, but with Mourinho, and after they lost the League's Cup game or whatever, apparently he made his players sleep at the training ground, bro. Did you see that or no? When I thought of that, I immediately just thought of you. I was like, wow, dude, that guy's a fucking legend, bro. That shit would never happen here in this country.
Yeah, a little background. I saw the headlines. I didn't watch the game. So this was the game that just happened between Benfica, which the club he manages, against Braga. And Braga is a very good team in Portugal. It's outside the top three. They are the next best club. They lost to Braga in the cup. And yeah, that's just not acceptable.
He's like, I hope they don't sleep tonight or some shit like that.
Yeah. I think he said something like, I hope they sleep as good as I will tonight, which is not at all. He's awesome. Legend. He's the best, dude. He's the best. I would love that guy would be a dream hire for me for the U.S. men's national team, because he will not play politics the way that everybody else here has played politics. He will be more like Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He will just call it like it is. Say, yeah, an MLS, no relegation. What's there to play for? Complacency all around. This country's screwed. We need to get more players out of MLS and go to Europe.
Yeah, true. It seems like with Pochettino, even though I'm sure he sticks true to who he is, but he seems more of a guy that would play the political game in a small sense versus a Mourinho where it's like absolutely unacceptable. Mourinho's going to do what he wants, but Pochettino kind of like a nice guy. You know, he'll be able to talk to the media in a positive way, even though, you know, Pochettino still does call it out, but not in the sense where if it was Mourinho, like Mourinho would be fucking badgering the reporters and fucking going off, dude. Right? Pochettino seems a little bit like a nicer guy, no?
Yeah. Even though he did trigger a lot of people in the establishment here, because he was calling people in the establishment, the media, basically he was calling them donkeys, you know, by saying, why are you always asking me the stupid ass question of why aren't you calling the regulars? Who the fuck are the regulars? And he also criticized the fans and the culture here in the United States by saying, hey, look at our stadiums full of the opposition. Where are you people? You guys don't have the culture. Super triggering. And he also said on Andres Cantor's show that there's no relegation in MLS, so there is no real pressure here in MLS for the players, which, by the way, that interview with Andrés Cantor was slid under the rug and ignored by the mainstream MLS US soccer media here. It was not amplified either. We were just talking about how 343 is not amplified. Tactical manager is not amplified. They don't share our stuff. They don't share Eric Winalda's stuff. They like Andrés Cantor, but when he had that interview, they didn't amplify that interview because Pochettino shat all over the American soccer ecosystem. They can't even handle that guy who's a nice, I agree with you. He's a nice guy. He kind of is. He's super diplomatic about it versus what he could be saying. And so was Klinsmann, by the way. Klinsmann was a super nice, diplomatic guy, like lovable teddy bear compared to what he could have been saying. And they crucified that fool. The moment he said, oh, this is a mistake, Bob, you know, Michael Bradley and Altidore and Clint Dempsey coming back to the States, Jesus Christ, this is terrible. We need them to stay in Europe. The best player should be over there. They murdered that fool. They got him fired. Yep. And when he was assisting players or encouraging youth national team players and players here in the States to go to Europe, they crucified him. So yeah, Mourinho coming here, way worse. And by the way, there was a time, you know, before Klinsmann, where Bielsa was reportedly kind of in the running or kind of being considered to come to the U.S., but Bielsa said, I want my own staff. I need these sorts of powers. I'm in complete control. They're like, fuck that. We ain't giving it. Could you be Marcelo Bielsa being the U.S. men's national team manager, bro? That is totally next. Way beyond Mourinho. Way beyond. Because that fool tells it straight how it is.
Oh, but Gary, you know, he just lost to the U.S. fucking 4-0 or 5-0.
Why would we hire him, man? Oh my God. Okay, let's cut it right there, dude, before I go on for another hour.
All right, bro. Good stuff, dude. Hey, if, for the audience sake, dude, if you made it to the end, I'm just curious who watches all the way through. Just comment it. Even if you're going to comment like a thumbs up or something, just I'd like to see who made it all the way to the end. Cause like I said, those are the true legends, bro. Stick with us for 2 hours.
Bro, John Garber's not going to comment.
He might, dude.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.